All right, g'day guys. Are we in the right session? This is architecture reviews. There's no Windows 8 devices or anything cool like that. We're just going to be looking through some solutions and talking about ways of writing better code. All right. How many people are already using Visual Studio 2012 in the room? Okay. All right. So we've only got 30%. A lot of these tools will be appropriate for you, tools and techniques, if you're using Visual Studio 2010 as well. But I don't know about versions before that. Okay, who's on a version before 2010, like 2008 and earlier? Okay, all right, so just a few of you. All right, the rest of you should be good. All righty. So, this talk is a talk that I've kind of put together because I spend a lot of my time going into companies and having a look at the code bases. And the reason that companies call you in to talk about these type of things are primarily because they're going through a lot of pain. Sometimes they just are curious, they just want a third party to have a look and tell them that they've got a clean bill of health. But just like, I guess, in the real world, we don't usually go to the doctor until we've got some pain. It's the same situation here. And so I write these documents, and I've just went and got one. Let me just pull him up. Oh, wrong one. I went and got one, and what I did is I renamed it to Northwind, so you wouldn't know who it was. But essentially, they, in this case, this was just done a little while ago, and they want an independent auditor, and they wanted it to be unbiased. They wanted to look at the source code. They wanted to understand, essentially, why they have these two massive outages. And why is it taking so long for the devs to get us onto the new system? Okay, it was a significant piece of work. They were building an ERP system in .NET, and their managers, who were non-technical, wanted to know. And it's not that uncommon a situation for me to be placed in, and I guess many of us are asked to look at other people's code. So in this particular case, it's not... the findings weren't always the exact same as others, but the code and stuff was fine. The processes were bad, and the teams were not communicating at all. So I only mention this because usually I'm focusing on this area, and that's usually a problem, but I put it in perspective. It's not always the case. And I'll just try to see if there's anything useful in here, but they were using all the right technology or the latest stuff. They had decent architecture diagrams of how they were doing things. They were trying to use Kentico and other things. They were storyboarding things. So storyboarding is always useful if you want to write nicer code, because you get a cleaner system in you write less junk in the beginning and less refactoring. Obviously in 2012 now, you've got the storyboarding tool inside PowerPoint, so you could be using that. In this case, the code complexity, I'll talk about this in a little while, but essentially you look at the maintainability index inside Visual Studio, and most of the time you'll see green. In this case, you'll see green because what they were doing was pretty decent. If you see numbers that are between 40 and 60, you'll see yellow, and then you'll see 20 to 40 is red. Now, anything under 20 is essentially bleeding, and they don't even, they need an image to show the bleeding pain, but that's kind of where you'd be. You spot other things when you're going through this code, and we'll talk about that. Session state was problematic. Naming conventions looked like they'd come from the access days or something. Locking code around singletons, exception handling problems. They had huge problems getting new developers on board. And building a machine took a few days. It was quite incredible the amount of dependencies they had and stuff. And then there was a whole lot of problems with the performance of pages, all right? And it just keeps on going, and I'm not even You know, there's certain chunks inside the pages that were incredibly slow, and there was lots of different bits and pieces that, and so that's kind of at a high level why I decided to write the talk, because I have these things and I hadn't seen anyone else do a talk on this type of stuff. All right, so how the way I've broken this talk down is into three parts. The first things you look out for before you start getting into the actual code, some of the high-level tools that you use, and then some of the manual checking you need to do. All right, so before I do this, I wouldn't mind hearing from you guys. Let me just create a new document. Just tell me some of the things when you're looking at other people's code that you really hate, and that some of the stuff that you try to fix, or their pet peeves. Inconsistently formatted. Can you be a bit more specific?
Some people don't give a single style for spacing, etc.
Right, okay. What's your name, sir?
Sam.
Sam. All right, Sam goes for the big ticket item straight away. All right. Next. No comments. Oh, that's interesting. All right. No comments. Some people say that they don't. So are you saying you want no comments or you don't like no comments? Yeah. I want comments. Okay, what's your name?
Ian.
All right. Okay. All right. Just on that one, before I go any further, who likes comments? Most. Who doesn't like them? Just a few. All right. So we'll say that's 90% want comments. All right. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about that one. Okay. This is a comment. He likes comments that essentially say, this is a comment. I am opening the connection. Okay. Yes.
Badly named variables.
All right. So a little bit similar to Sam's one, badly named variables.
Swallowing exceptions.
All right. Yes. Sorry?
Lengthy
method names or just long methods? You're right. Long methods. All right. True. Hold on one sec.
Duplicated code.
That's a good one. Duplicated code. You know, there's nothing wrong with copy and paste inheritance, is there? It's all right. Hold on. Yes, sir.
Too many responsibilities in the class.
Too many responsibilities. So not following the single responsibility pattern, right? Okay. Are you Dutch? Oh, yes. All right. They're usually quite strict. All right. They're not as bad as the Germans, but they're close. All right. Yes, sir. What? Hard coding, yes. That's a horrible one. Hard coding, yes.
Magic strings.
Magic strings, the same thing, isn't it? Oh, well. Will we put it together? Yeah, magic strings. Yep. Who else have we got? Yes, sir. Not using interfaces. All right. What about using interfaces too much? Okay. I love it when someone first learns about interfaces and everything goes overboard. Anyway. Yes. All right. Yes, sir. Speculative. Oh, yeah, that's like a overarching thing. So, starting putting functionality that we might need one day. All right, he calls it speculative. Try to keep the words a bit shorter for me, because I'm Australian. Yes, sir. Trusting him. Okay. Yep. How do you solve that? Okay, so you're talking about pulling data in and getting it in, so having
things like a tripod rather than just try to do straight converts, cleaning the data as it comes up.
Yep. Double checking data validation. Yep, okay, cool, yes sir.
Security,
all right, can you be a bit more specific? Right. Yep, overflow. SQL injection, yep. All right. I've never had this many responses before. All right, yes, sir. Not removing? Okay, so are you talking about commenting code and leaving it commented? All right. Huge chunks of commented out code and unused code. And all right. All right. All right, we're never going to ship any software here. Untest code.
Missing contracts.
Yep. All right.
Checking for parameters.
Like missing contracts. Parameter problems. That type of thing. Yeah. Is it over there, yes, sir. Say louder. Right. Okay. Modularity problems. All right. And coupling and okay, all right, all right. We gotta finish this. Surely we've hit everything. Yep. Multi-threading gone wrong. All right, we're taking that one off the table. All right, but you actually the more and more that we will start using all these parallel libraries and things, the more problems we're gonna end up with. That you know, because we don't have beautiful testing frameworks for this type of stuff. And we're going to get more and more of these problems that we can never get in tests, and it's going to be a problem. But yes, multi-threading. Yes. Yes, sir.
No design document.
No documentation. All right. Who likes documentation? Who likes getting someone else to write the documentation? All right, everyone. Okay, it's funny, everyone's definition of what documentation is extremely different. Yes? Global variables. Global variables, yep, okay. And I think I kind of got that, have I? I'll put it up here, but... Yep, over here. Any, done? Going once, going twice. Ah, scalable and performant. You from Microsoft? No. Scalability. Performability. Do you like all those? Yeah. Yeah, fast and fluid, this guy. He is from Microsoft. Performance. Performer. I like the abilities. Ability. Durability. Am I predicting it right? Yep. Testability. Yeah, he's definitely from Microsoft. Yes, maintainability. All right, anyway, there's a lot of those. Yes. Okay, good. All right, we're done. Great, yes. No design. All right, that's a big one. It's a little bit like this. I'll put it in the same area, but I know what you mean. It's just... See how it goes. Okay. Well, obviously, you're a waterfall guy, right? No. He wants it all. He wants to know everything before we start. That's good. All right. Then we won't have to start. Okay. All right. Any others? Good. So that's... we won't cover all that. But anyway, it was interesting. I learnt a lot. Thanks. All right. A little about me. I am the chief architect at SSW. We're a gold partner in Sydney. And do the east coast of Australia. I'm a Microsoft Regional Director and MVP, and I'm an MVP in the ALM team with Microsoft. I spend a lot of my time with SharePoint. I like the lifecycle stuff. I've had a lot to do with the new TFS preview, all the work item stuff. I have a lot of input into that. I work with the team pretty much every few days. So that's my Twitter. All right, that's my little products. And that is my that's my favorite role. I'm a soccer coach. I only got promoted this year, so I'm now the soccer coach. And I have my kids at halftime. They're doing retrospectives. And, you know, so I ask each one, they line up, and then they answer questions. All right, so what didn't go very well during that half? And they have to call something out. And what went well? And the mothers come up to me and go, how do you make them talk so much? How do you do all that? And I haven't told them that I'm introducing them to Scrum Young. But that's, I will let them down lightly. All right. So, all right. So the first things that I look out for before I start getting into the code, I like to just ask quickly a few big ticket items just so I kind of am roughly abreast. And the first thing I like to ask is, who's doing all the UI stuff? Like who's doing all the CSS work and all those type of style issues that are coming? And a lot of the times it is the actual devs who are now at a point where they don't want to even give you the code, because they say, like, all these disclaimers, like, all right, you can have the code, but it's, I already know that there's lots of problems in this and I'm not particularly proud of it. I'm not ready for you to have a look at it anyway. And I often think this is a big ticket item, that one, you know, it should be ideally that someone else is looking after a lot of the UI stuff. If you're looking after a lot of the UI, you're bogged down and you don't spend as much time getting the code to be as maintainable as possible. Who ends up here getting stuck doing UI stuff? So you can see that, you know, there's 60 or 70% of the room have that problem. Do you have a Scrum Master? I like asking that. I like to just know how it's working. Yep. Who has a Scrum Master? Okay, so I'd say 20% of the room would have a Scrum Master. Who's doing Scrum? Okay, so about 40% are doing Scrum and 20% of a Scrum Master. Okay, that's I'll have to ask you about that later. Okay, who's got continuous integration going? What percentage have we got here? Okay. So maybe 30%. Now, one thing that I find interesting about continuous integration is I can't even think of a client that we have put in continuous integration who has got rid of it. You know, a lot of things you put in and they stop doing it or that type of stuff. But I'm sure it's possible, but I can't even think of one. How many people know of customers that have got it going and then stopped doing it? So I'm sure it happens. No one here is putting up their hand. But to me, that's a pretty compelling story in itself. Okay? So continuous deployment. This is where I hope that we'll be in a next year or so. How many people have, when they check code in, that it goes through some tests and then it automatically deploys to production? Pussies. All right. There's only two of you. How many people have it automatically deployed to staging or testing? Okay, all right. So we've got at least 10% of the room. And I think that will be talked about more and more in the next next few years, because it is a unnecessary problem. Okay. All right. And do you have a Schema Master? So a Schema Master to me is someone in charge. Now, I know this is kind of anti-Scrum, but in terms of schema, I think that one person should be in charge of schema. So if you're a team, you know, probably have the oldest guy here as the Schema Master, and then the other guys, you know, give the SQL files to him, he checks it, and it gets checked in. I just think it's too dangerous to have everybody on the team making schema changes. And the reason I mention that is because if you're trying to get to continuous deployment, every check-in goes in straight to test and is ready to be tested by the testers, then you're going to have to come up with a story for schema that doesn't require you to do a compare of the prior version and the current version before that goes live. That stuff has to be done with the check-in automatically. All right. And I also believe in a TFS to master. Someone's, if everyone's maintaining the TFS server, no one is. And when I say the TFS server, I'm not thinking particularly of admin tasks. I'm thinking of, you know, the check-in policies and, you know, all these different types. There's it's a beast, you know, TFS. All right. Well, I'm not really meaning, so he's saying, why can't you call them TFS administrators? Well, first of all, master sounds cooler, okay? We love the term Scrum Master, don't we? Sounds cool, okay? What did we used to call Scrum Masters? Something that didn't sound cool anyway, you know? I can't even think. Oh, Project Managers, that's right. Okay. Yeah, they weren't cool. Okay, so, don't quote me on that, that was... The Scrum Masters are not project managers. I don't want to see any tweets about that. All right, I'll be sacked. All right, anyway, I'm not meaning an administrator. I'm still saying there is a TFS administrator role, and that's done by a sysadmin type thing, but a TFS master is the guy in charge of all the kind of the technical processes and the implementation of how you're doing the commenting policies and all those other type of things. Okay. I expect we'll have more and more check-ins policies as we go along. All right, any other questions relating to the first set of questions? Good, all right. Next thing, I like to just check they're on the latest version, drives me crazy when they're not. I like to know what extensions are the team on, because I generally think that as a team, they should have a consistent environment and they should have a consistent set of extensions. And if they don't all have ReSharper installed, I have serious questions. All right, who's got ReSharper? Oh, look at that. All right, so 80% of you, good. All right, gold star. Now, the next thing that I do is check in and compile. Get latest and compile. I am not gonna tell you the percentage of times that this fails. And I can never understand why this is such an ongoing problem. So it's, you just can't do a get latest and have it compile, which you should. I should be able to freshly go on the machine. Now that particular client I just went to and did that document, that was an incredible debacle, how you could not, you physically, unless you're actually on their domain, you couldn't get any of the code to compile. So it was terrible. Anyway, so the things that you manually have to do before you can compile, let's just say that they're using Infragistics and you know, you got to get the register licenses all sorted out before things work. Well, all those manual steps should be in the instructions compiled file or document. Okay, I like docs instead of text files because then I can see some images. All right, then I want to run the unit tests. And when the unit tests run, they should work except for the integration stuff. And the integration stuff, what you need to get the integration stuff to work, and that could be databases, web services, who knows what they would be, but I want to have documentation of out of the box what fails and why. Fair enough? All right, and the same thing for the schema. I don't care if you use OSQL or SQL command, we have a DLL that we use called SQL Deploy. I think it's a free DLL and it does schema changes automatically. So you just put the SQL files there. It doesn't do anything special apart from it just has a nice UI. All right. And then when I follow those particular steps, I want to see everything pass. That's what my level of expectations are getting up and running. And if you want a level 3 gold star, then the development environment should be very much streamlined, okay? I'm very happy if I have a Word document that tells me all the things I've got to do to get up and running so I'm a member of the team. But there's a whole lot of things that, there's a whole lot of things that cause things not to work. Usually lots of dependencies, but I like to do this, and I like to recommend that you have your workstations automatically scripted with PowerShell. So, and if you can't get this whole thing working in a minute or so, then you've got problems. So, here is my rough recommendation to you. You can run something like setup-environment.powershell, and it would tell you all the things that are missing from your machine. So in this case, I've run it and I've got two problems. And it will tell me what's not working. then an all setup environment actually doesn't do anything apart from just do a whole lot of checks. Then you can run setup environment dash fix. So you're on purpose, fix whatever you can, install what extensions I've got to install, install Telerik things, you know, any of these third party things, just make work. Obviously, if it's not working, because in this case you have to manually do something with, say, Azure, then that's that. And so when after I've run fix and it fixed one thing, the next time I run it, it will only have one thing left. That style of thing, that's what I'm thinking. How many people have their development environment kind of scripted like that in some manner? Just a few, four. Okay, all right. And a PowerShell or something else? So of that ilk, sir? Can't remember? No? But it's automatic. Okay. And how are the other guys doing? Sorry?
Alteris.
Okay. What's that? Okay. All right. Software deployment tool. And what's the other one?
We're imaging it.
Okay. All right. Cool. Okay. So there's lots of ways of solving this. I'm going to tell you PowerShell is pretty cool. Do it like, what's your name? Matthew. All right. Okay. He'll give you the scripts after, okay, which will help you along. Right, Matt? Okay, you blog it. All right. Okay, so next one. So we've got the machine up and running. That solves a lot of problems if you can have that. And actually, you're going to be surprised. Once you've got a little PowerShell script that does that type of stuff, every time as a team you make another decision to add another one in, it's not much trouble. It really isn't. It probably sounds like, oh God, you know, that's a lot of work. It isn't, or I wouldn't be sprouting it. I think it's really valuable. Okay, so the next thing is checking in and deploy. If I just want to get a, you know, just add a one line of code, what is the process now to get me going? And obviously, I'm going to tell you to have an instructions deploy. So I will follow these steps and I'll be deployed. And you tell me if there's certain rules on how you want comments checked in and all the other bits and pieces, where I copy DLLs to, what I have to do. I don't want to speak to anyone, I want to follow what this says. And hopefully it's nice and simple. Now sometimes when I've got teams to do this, it's a very long document. And when there's 28 steps, and I'm not exaggerating here, to do these type of stuff, you know that you're going to have a screw up in deployment, don't you? The more of these steps you have, the more problems you're going to have. So, for a start, have PowerShell, okay? And here we have a build PowerShell, a deploy to dev PowerShell, deploy to test, a deploy to production. Okay, and these scripts, as you know, a level 2 gold star should be just you run these scripts. Now I'm always a fan of developers shouldn't deploy anything. It's so much better to put in a process where the business or the testers deploy. So they test the version, and let's just say they, I don't know, give them a button on a web page that calls the deploy to production. That way, if things go wrong, you can always say, well, I never deployed it. You know, you tested it. I'm busy. All right. You know, let them have downtime for a few days. Make them go through some pain. All right, they won't do that again. Okay, all right, just joking. Yes, but at least they're claiming ownership. Okay. All right, you still got to fix the problem. Yes, eventually. Okay. It depends how long you want to keep your job. Okay. All right. So for a gold star, I'll show you this. This is an example of a colleague of mine, and I like this. And this is you can see the different environments. So in this case, he's looking at production, and you can see everything, and obviously all this is done manually. So there's no way of deploying without using this portal. And this portal stamps every single DLL with versions, and he can see what were the changes, what work items changed since the last one. So he's obviously got the check-in policy. What is it, the work item check-in policy? So when you check in, you're forced to associate the work items. How many people have done that particular check-in policy? Okay, wow, that's the best I've ever seen. So 30% of the room is checking in, and they've got a requirement that you have to say what work item you were working on, which is great. But you can see that you can see what associated change that's happened. For some reason, he's put here all the actual files. I'm not sure why you would actually need the files. I would hesitate to do that. I would call that some level of dysfunction to need that. But anyway, there might be some reason. Anyway, but that's the type of thing. And who would love the TFS team to give us some portal that did that? All right, a few of us. All right, I would. I'm sure there's plenty of other things for them to do, but that would be good. So put that on the user voice site. Make sure they give us some portal to deploy. Okay, so that's up and running, and we've got our code now. So the next thing that I would do is I go through and start reviewing the solution and the project names. And so in this case, I have just got one of them from a couple of senior devs in our company, so there's probably better ones. Is this too small for you? Who says it's a bit too small? Oh, all right. I'm going to blame the AV guy. He said that you would have good eyesight. All right. Now let me just bump that down. I'll go to... How blind are you? Let's come back here. All right. Is that a bit better? That'll have to do. All right. So, anyway... I like to put all my projects under folders like this. Sorry it's so black and white, but I'm on Visual Studio 2012. I've got the UI ones here, I've got the workers here, the business ones here, the data ones here, all right, that type of thing. I just think it's a lot cleaner to do it like that. Now, I know a lot of devs don't actually like this style, and I've never really understood why. They just like seeing 40 project names down there, but I think that's much cleaner. Who agrees with me it's cleaner? Almost. Who doesn't? There's a few. Okay. All right. So, anyway, that is the kind of the first thing that I like to do. Just have a look at all the project names. They often will tell you there's a few things there to clean up. But that would be my next step. I just like them to be some type of consistency, and this is kind of what I'm looking for in this case. All right, so the next thing is to review the documentation. Now, this one gets hard most times with most teams. Level of documentation seems to differ a lot, and as an industry, we haven't really got to a point where there's some major... consensus on how we're going to do our documentation. And it can range from no documentation, and that's common, to a few pages, to very long documents. What's the problem with documentation? Gets obsolete. Okay. And the problem with, what in agile terms, what do we call it? Artifacts, yeah, but what is the bad thing about documentation in agile terms? What was that? Yes, who's that? Yes, all right. One guy at the back, he's practicing agile techniques. It's called technical debt. And anything like essentially Scrum says, if you're going to create diagrams or documentation, then at the end of the sprint, you're meant to throw it out. Now, obviously, I've never met a Kiwi that likes wasting money. So it gets hard to, make that investment to make the document and then chuck it. Of course, Scrum will allow you to keep it if it's kept up to date. And so you've got to have processes in place like adding it to your definition or done and things like that if you want to keep that documentation, because you're not allowed to keep outdated stuff. So you're going to draw a picture of all the classes, then make sure that you've got something that at the end of that sprint, they're still up to date. So here's what I would say. The old school guys, they like heavy, long documents. They like sequence diagrams and still a lot of... And actually, I do know the odd younger guy that likes a lot of these things. They like to plan up front. UML, popular to a subset of developers. And I've just taken a couple. I found this amazing, but I have a lot of architect friends from other countries, and the tool they always use is called Enterprise Architect. How many people have come across Enterprise Architect? Oh, a lot of you. Okay. So maybe 40% of you have come across that tool, and who knows where it's from? Australia. I never knew that. I thought I knew almost everybody in Sydney, I didn't realize that it came from Australia. I just assumed it was like a Scandinavian product, because most of my Scandinavian friends seem to like it. So I looked it up, and then it wasn't in Sydney, and I was a bit shocked, because all the good software is built in Sydney, if you didn't know. And then it was down in Melbourne, and Melbourne is in like the deep south, and when I looked it up, it's not even in Melbourne. It's in some little town out near where Ned Kelly was shot or something. It's a long way out, and they produce this software that everyone loves. So I'm always amazed. And this stuff is better than the architect tools inside Visual Studio 2012. And it has its place if you want to start designing stuff before writing code. It's a little bit like what I said with the mock-ups. So sorry, this is in Norwegian or Dutch or something. Oh yeah, there you go. It's for you, sir. There. Yes. And there's a lot of Kunda Boona Hugans here. And so, yes, anyway, this describes how, and it's not for me, but a lot of people really like this, and I'm not saying it's definitely not to be done, but I'm very hesitant on this. So, one of the things that I do find very important when people are asking me to start reading this stuff is the stuff that's not done, because usually half of this has been done and other parts haven't. I want red, and I want red on the things that are not implemented. So I want to know where it's at, and I think that it's got to be incorporated into your technical, into your definition of done, that's always up to date. All right. I like to, I think it's always very important to show the last date and time this was updated, as you can see up here. And I like to know who's responsible for these different areas. Okay, I think people have got to own these different domains. All right. So I do the same thing that I do in Visual Studio. I want to see to-do, colon, Dan, okay? Or that type of thing. So there's this more new school type of way of working, and they have just a business. I do believe that, I've just told you that you should have an instructions compile and an instructions deploy. I like to tell teams to have a business.doc, and the business doc, from a high level, from a business point of view, just tell me the main things about this system. So when a new guy comes on, he gets his machine up and running, and he reads the business doc about basically what it's solving. And I'm going to say it should be just a couple of pages. It shouldn't, maybe one page if you're really good. And I want to know all the technologies in another doc. If you've made decisions that, I don't know, dependency injection is really, really important to you, or unit of work, and all these practices and patterns, whatever they are, I want to read about them in technologies. Okay? If they start telling me about these things and they're not in that document, I like to know. So that's my level of documentation. And then, of course, I'm saying that the unit tests themselves are another level of documentation. And you can go further and say the code and the work items are another piece of documentation. Now, this requires you to start using Annotate a bit. How many people use Annotate? Okay, so only four people. All right, so this is what I like to see, these documents. And then I consider these as documentation. And then we have just the good, there's a number of our senior guys in our company who just believe in zero documentation and just want the code. And they think it's fine, they work through it, there's absolutely no problems, and they go to new clients all the time. I'm going to tell you that I think that's a flawed way of thinking, that you do need to have minimal documentation. And in this case, I like to think of the backlog as a bit of documentation. Now, that's documentation that's to come. What about stuff that's been done? Well, if you've got a plan that you're always going to have the check-in policy on, then you've got this situation where you've got code and you've got the work items as part of your documentation. Now, that will require, in your definition of done, that the work items themselves are useful. Now, a lot of the time, you get a work, let's just say, you get a PBI, or a user story, a product backlog item. You have a look, and you look at the acceptance criteria and how it's been scoped to be done at the beginning of the sprint, and by the time that you implement it, you do it differently, right? So what was described in that PBI is not exactly what you did when you checked it in, but you still associated it and got rid of it because you cleaned up that user story. Fair enough? So I say in the definition of done, it's very important to go back to that and make, and when you re-speak to the product owner and say, all right, so how about we change the acceptance test to be like this or like that? You must update the acceptance tests, and you must be thinking this is part of the ongoing documentation. Now, I'm not going to tell you this is mainstream thinking, but I'm going to throw it out to you as a nice balance. Okay? I haven't heard anybody else kind of talk in this manner of how this works, but I'd definitely like your feedback on that as you go. All right. Anyway, I'm going to ask you to vote. Who likes, you know, the traditional old school way of doing documentation with, you know, a fair chunk of documentation? Okay, just a few. Okay. And the new school way. Okay, so maybe 50%. And what's the others that aren't voting? What are you thinking? What level do you want? Yes, sir. Middle ground. No, there's no middle ground. Come on. Sitting on the fence. All right, so the rest of you were sitting on the fence. All right, no problems. All right. So now it's into some high-level tools. And this is the second part, and the high-level tools are basically starting off with architecture, then code analysis and code metrics. All right. So what do you use to look at the architecture? You got this. You've had a look at those names. Now what? What's the next tool? There's plenty of them. I'm not saying one is the only one. What's the next step you guys would do? I didn't hear. N-depends. All right. How many people are familiar with N-depends? Heard of N-depends? Oh, not too many. All right. So under 10. Okay. So, all right. So I would say about 5% of the room have heard of N-depends. It's complicated. Yeah. It's complicated. It's written by a French guy. It's never going to be simple. Okay. So, now, N-depends is a third-party tool, but you have some tools in here already. So what you can do is you can generate a dependency graph, okay? And that's for the solution. You have that in Visual Studio 2010. It's slightly better in 2012, but this is a graphical way of doing it. How many people have done this?
It's only supported in architecture.
Oh, okay. So only five of you, and he's making the point that it's only in the architecture, sorry, it's only in the ultimate version. Yes, sorry, this is only for wealthy people. How many people actually have access to ultimate and have ultimate tools? Look at that, almost half the room. Okay, well, yes, lots of BMWs here. I had a very interesting, I've just come back from, I went to China, and then, but you know, in China, half the population are driving BMs these days. I was shocked. Like, I went there like 10 years before and they're on their bicycles. Now they're on, there's a huge middle class of driving BMWs. It's incredible. And it's very sad because I liked all the bikes. Huh?
Real ones?
Yeah, real ones. Yeah, no. That's a low blow. All right. Well, they look like Beamers to me. So when I went to Germany, and I couldn't wait to drive a German. I've only driven Toyotas, and I got a chance. I hired an Audi, okay, And Audis, they're really nice cars to drive. And I got to 245 real quick. And I didn't, and I was still going up, and then I stopped that because I did want to live. But I still had people overtake me at that speed. But I had so much problems with the Audi, like getting the GPS to work. Like there's this spinning thing here, it's a spin, and I never actually worked out that the four buttons up there were equivalent to the four buttons here. I know that's pretty stupid, but they didn't look like they were related. And I could never make it work. I thought you had to push it down harder or something. So I had a lot of problems with that. No, I had a lot, there's a lot. If you just want to pull in the blind, what are they called? The mirrors. Which I'd never done until I went to India, because everyone pulls in the... They actually drive with those things on the side, pulled in. And I asked them why, because they get them knocked off while they're driving, because nobody drives in a lane in India. And so just to pull those things in, I couldn't work it out, because I was parking in a tight spot, because there's ones to heat it up and cool it down and turn it, and it was very hard. So I actually never worked that out. I'm probably not that smart, because I never worked out how to actually increase and decrease the air conditioner. So I just turned it on until it got too cold, and then I turned it off. And then my kids in the back, they'd turn it back on because they had control of the stupid air conditioning, which I couldn't turn them off. And so they thought this is a great game, so they'd push it. This went on for like 2 days. I'd turn it off, they'd turn it on, and it just went on and on. So, and then I turned up to Munich to get my next car, because I wanted to try out all the different German cars since I was there, because my wife wouldn't let me buy a German car, because she's Greek, and she thinks that BMW stands for big money waste. And so I was going to get the Beamer, but they didn't. I was late by a day, so they gave me a Kia. Kia. In replacement. Well, you know, the Kia has a touch screen, and it was so much easier to use than the Audi. And I don't know how I got into that story, sorry. Anyway. So, let's move on to this assembly dependencies. And I will increase this up a little. And I'm sorry, this is going to be pretty small for you to see. But this is kind of what I would do next. And I start trying to see if there's what's in here. Now, I don't care about externals. Anything that I didn't write, I just kill that, delete. And then I start looking, like, I wish that it would put the web stuff at the top, and now I can't find anything. So I essentially want business second. I want the web. Where's that guy? And the web must be over there. Oh, this is annoying. There's got to be a better way. But I just want to show you. There's the web one in the wrong bloody place. So I put the web over here. And the web, and what I would... let me just get the data, so there's data access. Now, I'm actually not familiar with this project. I didn't write it, but I'll get the models over here. So that's... I don't mind if the models is referred to by every Tom, Dick and Harry. That's okay, so I'd kill that, but before killing it, I would just see if there's model tests. So what my first line of attack is just to check all the tests are there. And they're correctly being referenced, and this is a horrible experience because they're everywhere. And here's common. I'd kill common once I've found the common tests. Oh, there's common tests there. So actually, I've just noticed something that common tests. Hey, I don't want to move it. See that common tests? Why isn't that being referred to there? So the first thing that strikes me is wrong. And the first thing I would do is I would just take a screen capture, and then I would just put an arrow there, and I would copy that. And then I would come over to Team Explorer, and I would start adding new work items in there. And you could either make that a task or a backlog item, okay? So we could probably have that discussion as well, but architecture. Missing. That'll do. That should give them the message. They can fix that up. But that's on the backlog, and I want that fixed. All right. Now, And I go through this process until I think it's all pretty clean. So that's gone. And then I don't care about comments, so that's gone. And then you've got all this integration. Now that integration is a bit weird. It's not actually, that's the integration test there. And so this guy, there we go again. This one is not referencing that one. That strikes me as a smell. So I'd another take another screen capture, I'd ask about that. And then I'd, all these tests. Now, he's obviously very good at creating projects with tests, and the tests have no relationship to the action. They're probably empty, okay? So, you know, we can go into that and have a look at the code, and you'll probably find that they're empty. So I'm just going to kill all these things, and I'm getting rid of just the tests. See, they're the tests in the test integration that can refer to multiple. That's fine. The web tests, I'm okay with that, and I'm okay with the models. Get rid of the models and the model tests because I would report those too because they're missing relationships. But I just want to kind of just run through this a bit faster. A worker DLL, what is that thing? Looks like some service that's calling just the business. That looks pretty clean to me. Just calling business. Got data access, okay. And got security. Is it all right for security to be calling web and business and data access? Probably. You know, it's probably been called by everything. What's this one? Data access test. Yeah, I would just getting rid of all the tests. And then, now what's this orphan thing? I don't know what that is. I'd question what that is. And you know, you just keep going until you're down to the end. And I'll get rid of those tests. And actually, what you can see just to this, and this is a real project now, and the guys here would really need to do some explaining here. What's the problem? Yeah, why is web directly accessing data access? Now, these are actually two seniors on this project, and they'll have some explaining to do, but that is the type of thing and how you use that. All right, any questions on that? Okay, so the observation from the Slovakian here at the front?
Slovenian,
sorry. Slovakia, Slovenia, I thought it was the same country. Okay. You're one of the biggest countries in the world. Have you looked at Australia? Right, okay. Actually, in Austria, they have a lot of kangaroo signs there for some reason. It's very strange. They must get sick of being associated with Australia. Anyway, you lost my train of thought. Oh, yes, he was making the observation that there's the next level, that what I could have done to even prevent this is I could have put a check-in policy that prevents this style of code being allowed to be made, and that's a good observation, okay? I don't know if I want to bring up another point about that, but it's very hard to get to that point. And if you start making, I'm all for that, but it can be dangerous. Okay, the more, yes, it's very. You start putting a lot of these things in place. I'm kind of a believer in some of these things. I'll come to it. Okay, I'll talk about that. But I think you can drown your developers. Okay. So anyway, that's good observation. Now, if you can't afford the ultimate tools to do this, then you can buy this tool off this French dude, okay? And that's ndepends. And the way this works, sorry, ndepend. It should have an S. Anyway, don't suggest that to him. He doesn't like too many suggestions of that nature. We'll come into here, analyze VS solution. I sent him an email about his coloring. I'm not sure he liked it. Analyze VS solutions and VS projects. So this is the other way of doing it. And even if you have the ultimate tools, these tools give you extras on top of it. So I'll just come through here, and I am sure this resolution looks shocking. Anyway, this OK button should be next, but don't tell him that one either. And we'll come here, and this OK button should be next as well. And what this will do is analyze all the assemblies. And this is pretty cool. You can actually put this on your build process, so this happens every time. Nothing wrong with doing that. And then it says it's been modified. Do you want to reload it? Sure. And it opens up. How do I get rid of this thing? I'll just browse the interactive graph And I'll just minimize this for 1 second. Because what it did is it opened up a web page. And the web page itself is pretty cool. Like, you see a dependency graph here. You see, now even if you don't understand this, and I know there's a lot like to understand, it just looks like you've done a lot of work. So you can put a couple of these screen captures in your documentation to the boss, okay? And go home early. Okay. And then you've got this dependency matrix. We'll come back to this type of stuff. But I just wanted to show you how cool this looks, and it will pretty much confuse everyone. But there's a lot of complicated stuff there. Even if you've just gone file new and generated a light switch project, it'll look as impressive as this. Okay. And then you've got this abstractness versus instability, and we'll have a look at that. And remember that one that I called out to you that I said, I don't know what it is? Well, this would tell me straight away to start having a look at it, because there's something really odd about it. Okay, probably looks like they've left garbage behind to me from first impressions. Now, in addition, if you look here, and unfortunately I haven't chosen the world's best project to demo this, because see all the reds? All the reds are zero, okay? But usually you'll get some numbers in here, and you'll see they're the bad code. I hate this color system. So if someone can complain to the French dude, that would be good. Because I used to put all these colors, green for good, red for bad, but I just think it's better to be black and white. I'm so used to black and white now, you know, from Microsoft. And the only things you want is just the red to be, I just don't think the green should be green. The red, the whatever, don't worry. Anyway, and your dead code, who was the guy over here that asked about dead code? Here you've got a tool that finds about code that's not called. All right, so there's lots of goodness in here. All right, now it's not a free tool, it's a few $100. And actually, Kiwis don't like French, do they? I just remember that. So, all right, yes. Oh, that's harsh, okay. All right, now I haven't made any Kiwi jokes, have you noticed? I got a warning last year, yes. All right, so there'll be no Kiwi jokes. All right, okay, so you've got both these choices, dependency graph and then depends. I might quickly show you inside here. I wouldn't use his dependency graph. I just showed you the built-in one. It's much better than this one, so I wouldn't use this guy. But he has some other things. Now, the other things that you find are not very easy to know. You have to know there's a red dot in the corner, you have to click it. Otherwise, you'll never find out how any of this works. So it's designed for smart people to find. There we go. I don't know why he just doesn't open that thing up. But as you, this is pretty clever in that when you click on these different things, see, type's too big, method's too complex, and now all those things that you were asking me about before, most of them can be found in here. And type's too big. Now, there's two types that are too big. Two items, and here's all the, and actually, you're not going to believe this, this is all done using these type of link expressions, number of lines of code. Now, you don't want any of your code to look bad on these things, so just increase that, and number of instructions, and then all most of it will disappear for you. But the good thing is you can change all these expressions so that they'll get to, you know, what you're looking for, okay? And methods too complex. Now, if you're reviewing someone else's code and you want to make them make sure that they are feeling bad, we can probably just say two levels deep. And there's, oh, no, that's not going to do the job. But I'll make that 10. Yep, oh, now, oops, what did I do? I put a tab in there. Okay, whoops, zero. That's probably a bit harsh. I could make it one. But you get the idea. You got lots of these things. Have I tried to write the query? No. No, I'm having trouble editing, can't you see?
As long as you're dealing with numbers, you're pretty good.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, it would be pretty hard to write these, but you, you know, theoretically you could. And that's the, if you actually did want, you know, change these methods, if you came across something and you just didn't want too many parameters because you're calling some AS400 system or something like that, then you've got all this. The method's too complex. There they all are. So anyway, you can come more into here and go into the, what's the dependency matrix? Oh no, not that one. There's so much stuff here. This one, look at this. This is so complicated. Like, you would think that the average person couldn't understand it, but here you have an Australian to guide you. Now, the methods that are too complex, there's four of them. And see the blue up there? Now, I did send him an email asking him, can you make that blue red so I know it's a problem? And he said no. I didn't get any more of an explanation. But so anyway, what you can see is as you click each one, different things go blue, meaning problem. Okay? So I'll just click on this one. And I want to tell you something. Now, this is not designed for idiots. So if I want to know more about what that one is, I have to right-click, and then I go pin description in info view, of course. And then this thing pops up, and then I can learn about the cyclomatic complexity. And then I open this up, and you will learn a lot about this type of stuff. So usually what's going to happen is you're going to find bad code and drill into it, and then you'll learn a little bit more. And he's very detailed in exactly what you're doing in your code that can cause these type of problems. Okay, so it's quite interesting. And you'll learn a lot. You'll be a much better coder understanding the problems, and there you all have it. All right, now let me just fly through a bit more of this. All right, I just want to... So we saw that. I do have a dream that if you're all using folders, instead of it generating that crap that I had to clean up and is very painful, that it automatically put it into sections with, you know, groupings like this. Okay, so hopefully there's a couple of guys over there didn't like it, but you know, if we ever got this tool, then you'll all agree, put it in folders. Anyway, so we've talked about that. The next thing is code analysis, and to run through code analysis, that's the next step. And I would say level one is get resharper going and get all the rules to green. Then code analysis, then code analysis. So start with the default, then go all rules. And then style cop, just put all the rules on. And in code auditor, we have a tool, put all the rules on of that. And you'll get your code looking much better. Who subscribes to this point of view? All right, that's pretty good. All right, so half the room subscribes to it. Now, let me just tell you what will happen when you go back from Tech Ed and start putting all these rules on to your teams. They will start drowning. They will... that's just a picture of me holding up a rock. And you can keep trying to force them to keep doing it, and they will start Googling, and then you'll get a letter. All right. So it's really, really important that you use the campsite rule, which is basically leave a campsite a little bit cleaner than when you got it there. So I say resharper, campsite rule, so try to get it cleaner, code analysis, default settings, then the rest of the solution is custom. Custom, okay? So style cop, custom. And I want those ones that you're doing in the document. So which rules have we turned on and which ones have you turned off? So have that document with the points in there. So that's resharper. That red is what you want to reduce. You want to keep and just slowly, slowly putting one more rule in there and follow custom policies. All right, there's resharper, custom, start turning these on as a team. Code analysis, okay. All right, now you have to decide how you're gonna suppress in source or in suppression file. I'm a fan, I know some people say in source and some people say in suppression. I will tell you that in my case, if the rule is no good, remove it. If it's not applicable in this case and this code I'm looking at, put it in the suppression file. It's not applicable. It's in the suppression file. But if I can't do it right now, I don't have the bandwidth to clean this up, but I kind of agree with the rule, then it goes in the source and it's a lot more visible. All right. And then you have to decide if it's going to be a task or a bug. I'll get you to read my rules about that. I just want to mention the next start type of thing is all the design patterns. The design patterns are really important that you as a team start working out which design patterns you're going to use. They communicate a massive amount of data in a few words, and they're accepted problems too. And it's so good to be able to say, look, we're, you know, our project is using, you know, this and this and this. You know, it's an MVC project with, you know, unit of work. And it just a couple of words will communicate a lot to a new team member. All right. So, you know, you pick out which ones you want and you put it in that document, and as a team, just decide on those. I do want to just mention to you, I won't go through anti-patterns, but that tool will talk to you about anti-patterns, but you don't want to have God classes, and you don't want to have useless, you know, stuff that just maps, does nothing, okay? It's just a waste of time. Comments, I'm going to tell you that comments should display the intent. Too many comments are a smell. Try to make your code read like poetry. Is that possible? Okay. So I like to read down the why and read the how across. Okay, and I think, but as you know, what's your name? Yes, Dan. Sam. So Sam mentioned in the beginning about the, you know, some of the smaller ticket items. You're looking at code, you know, I have to keep fixing up his formatting that he did before. A lot of those things can be fixed up with tools like ReSharper and stuff, so they disappear. What you'll notice is if you start with the big ticket items, all the smaller things like naming conventions and things that you brought up end up being way down the list because there's so many bigger items to address. Now, I just want to mention to you code reviews. Code reviews now in 2012 can be done inside the tool, and I just want to show you how you do that. So you can do a code review inside here. So I just want to show you. Did you see that? You request a review, and it comes up, and you put the guys, the seniors who need to do it. So here's my scenario to you. You've got guys today that check in code. But in the future, if we get to this panacea of continuous deployment, we won't be allowed to check in stuff and then have it picked up in a code review. We should not be allowed to, you know, check stuff in if we're not sure. We got a dodgy regex and we're not a good regex, you know, writer, then we need the regex guru on the team to validate that before we check it in. We can't take these risks of checking garbage in. So this tool will end up being extremely good on this. So you click submit request. You know, the senior guy, Dan in this case, will see this. He will then click it, it'll open up. He'll look at the code that's changed. He will, you know, you've got these beautiful little things. And then he will add his comments in the code. Say, why did you change this? What are you doing? You idiot, you know, you goose. And then at the end, he will send either it looks good or it needs work, okay? Very American, isn't it? There's no total garbage, okay? Okay. They should have said, has some challenges in this code. All right. Anyway, so he'll get that, and that's how it goes on. So hopefully you'll find that quite good, and that's the kind of the process how that works. So let me just tell you, I've got a whole lot of other resources. I've got these rules called Rules to Better Architecture and Code Reviews, so I definitely love your feedback on that. I don't think I've got it perfect, and I would love to know which ones you agree with and which ones you don't. Okay, so in summary, I covered like in three sections, the first things to look out for, the high level tools and the manual checking, okay? And there's a lot of work in that manual checking. Please tweet me or email me the best tip or tool that you have or that you heard from me. And that's my email address. Please use a good subject like Attended Tech Ed New Zealand. I get a lot of email. And thank you.